And good morning, everybody, and welcome to WJTN and the Times of Your Life. I'm Andrew Hill.
I'm Russ Dietrich.
And Russ, we've had some fantastic guests over the last few weeks, and we're going to have some more great guests here in the future. And it's one thing when you have a great guest on the air, you know, with interesting stories to talk about. You know what makes it even better? Is when you have a great person on the air.
Amen.
And there's my intro to our guest this morning. Kimberly Lombard is here. Kim, good morning and welcome to WJTN's The Times of Your Life.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, we appreciate you coming in. It's funny for the audience, when I first invited Kimberly to come in, Kim was like, oh, yeah, great. You know, you know, we'll do this. And she's like, all right, we'll get together. We'll come up with some points, you know, to talk about. And I go, Kimberly, we'll talk about your job, but we want to talk about you. And Kimberly goes, wait, what? We're going to talk about me. Why do you want to talk about me? But Kim, you have, and we've been blessed with some great guests lately. There are so many different avenues I can go with this interview. You're a fascinating person. And I guess let's start with this, Kim.
Okay.
Tell us about childhood. What was little Kim like, Kimberly,
really?
As a kid? Yeah, we want to know. What was childhood like?
Nerdy, quiet. I actually grew up outside Buffalo and lived there, you know, my whole childhood in our house. And, you know, my mom is Irish Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
She lived in Buffalo her whole life. My mom's 90 now.
Mm-hmm.
And she actually moved to Jamestown 5 years ago from living 85 years in Buffalo, moved to Jamestown, lives a block away. And, you know, so I had, you know, my mom, my dad worked, my dad died 30 years ago. So
okay.
He's been gone quite a while. And
so I don't want to age you, but how old were you then?
When my dad died?
Yeah.
21. I'm 52. So
okay.
However that works out.
So and, relatively young adult.
Yep. Went to Catholic school. You know, very, very sort of traditional Catholic upbringing, I would say. Actually moved here in 1997. So
what brought you to Jamestown?
You know, I was working for what was then called at that time AIDS Community Services, and working in our Buffalo office and actually dating Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And he lived down here, and a job opportunity opened up to move to the Jamestown office. So that's what I did.
AIDS Community Services, how long is that? How old is that organization?
So the agency began in 1983.
Mm.
So we're getting close to 40 years, really as a volunteer response to this crisis of people dying. We now, you know that they were dying of AIDS, but at that time we didn't even, you know, have all the identifying words for it.
Yeah.
And, you know, now... That was the beginning of a very tiny nonprofit that has now grown to serve all kinds of medical conditions that, you know, are sort of outside traditional primary care medicine. And we are called Evergreen Health. We're no longer called AIDS Community Services because we serve lots and lots and lots of different disabilities now. So
do you work with the medical community, the doctors and nurses and all?
Yeah, we actually we do provide medical services, as well as sort of looking at the person as a whole picture. And we try to provide all the support services that go along with the, you know, important medical care. And I mean, we can get into that if you want to, but
well, I
want to
go back to, nerdy Kimberly.
Oh yeah, I'm sure you do. Nerdy Kimberly. Yeah.
One thing I told you in preparation for coming on the show was that Russ and I have a great tradition of going and bouncing all over the place when it comes to interviews. We have a question, it just pops in our head, and we want to get it.
I love it. So. Go ahead.
So why do you call yourself Nerdy Kimberly as a young girl? I mean, is that something you inherited from your parents? Or I know you have siblings. I mean, brother. I mean, why do you call yourself Nerdy Kimberly? What made you a nerd?
You know, maybe we should just go with that and say Nerdy Kimberly
now
on.
No,
you know, I was quiet then, which certainly people wouldn't call me that now.
Mm-hmm.
Very small, really tiny. Like, you know, when I entered high school, I looked like I was 10 years old. I think I was 80 pounds when I entered high school, you know, really small. Didn't play sports, I was just, you know.
What were your interests as a kid?
You know what? I would walk in our neighborhood, if I walked sort of across a big, busy street, Sheridan Drive, and actually there was a tunnel underneath this four-lane highway. There was a tunnel you could walk underneath it, and you'd walk over through this park, which is now a golf course, and there was a little library over there. And I would go there all the time and get a stack of books and come home and sit there and read these books, sit on the floor, and, you know, just be a nerd. That was, you know.
What was your favorite? Was you have a favorite author or a favorite book from childhood that you still follow here as an adult?
You know what? I read it all. I read it all. Of course, all the traditional stuff, you know, the Nancy Drew and the Judy Blooms and all those things. But I still am a really big reader. I mean, that has never left me. It ebbs and flows, as you know, with when you're an adult and you're busy and all those things, you know.
Yeah.
I'll go through phases where I'm voraciously reading and other times when, you know, I just sort of don't for a while. But I'm pretty active reader now, too. I'm pretty involved in the Chautauqua Literary and Scientific Circle over at Chautauqua Institution.
Oh, cool.
You know, and I get a little... Although I never played sports and I was that nerdy Kimberly, I'm actually almost like competitive with myself about those sorts of things.
Sure.
How many books on the list have you read? You know.
So are you an e-book reader or do you like the good old-fashioned smell and feel of a book?
I tried the e-book thing. Mm-hmm. I had the Kindle. I don't think I've read a book, an e-book in years.
Yeah.
I got to have the book.
It's nothing like having that book in your hand. You just have to find places to store them. And usually that's like holding my bed up or a dresser or something. And then I want to read that book again. I borrow it and everything's crooked for a little bit.
It's scary. The book storage is scary.
It is.
Although I have learned to take advantage of our local public library.
Nice plug.
And, you know, I try to you know, donate a little bit, to the library and just... borrow, you know, there are some books I must own.
Right.
They're so good and I love them so much I must own them, but I have stopped buying as many books because they're stacking up everywhere and I try to support our bookstore in Lakewood, you know, when I want to want to buy some of the books, but
the late Jim Rizzoli always used to say, "What's in your pocketbook?"
Yeah. The most important card in your wallet was your library card, right?
That's right. Yeah.
You know what? That's great. And, you know, when I was a kid, people used to talk about that, and you don't hear that anymore.
Well, it used to be a big deal to go to the library and get your library card. And I almost want to say, I went to Bemis, and I want to say we had to. I think at the 1 year to be able to do a book report, we had to go to the public library system, and we had to go to the Prendergast Library and get a book from there. And get a library card.
I like that.
Yeah, I thought that was fantastic. And it's funny. It's actually kind of embarrassing how many times I would lose my library card and have to go back to the Prendergast Library, and they would have me in the system. So they'd print you a new one, but every time the librarian would hand me this card and say, "Now, Mr. Hill, don't lose this card." A lot's changed with the library. We've come a long way. So, okay, so you're going through high school. Is that really your...
So I'm showing Andrew here. I just pulled out of my purse. You know, now instead of a library card, they give you this tiny little thing
it's
you
like
can hook onto your keychain. It is. It's a key fob.
Neat.
It's a little keychain.
Oh, my gosh.
With a little, with your library card.
So now you have your Shoppers Club cards and your library card in the same place.
Exactly, except you can see mine is no longer attached to my keychain because it busted off. And it's peeling and wrinkled, but I can't lose this because I need it.
But you knew exactly where it was when you got it.
Sure, it's in the very front pocket of my purse because I need it. But it's a mess. It's this filthy, mangled little.
Your interest in reading and interest in information, has it gone to the other avenue of magazines and newspapers?
That's a great question. I mean, I always did love newspapers. But I feel like I've moved away from that just like everybody else has, you know. I read a lot of news online as far as I read newspaper news online.
Right.
I mean, I don't know what you guys do, but
still once in a while I'll pick up the Post Journal or the Buffalo News.
Sure.
And one thing I know Jim Roselli was famous for. He loved when people traveled to bring him back a newspaper.
Yes.
So
nice.
It was 2 months ago I was visiting family and I'm looking at newspapers and this isn't a joke. I go, I would have taken a picture or a newspaper, bought a paper just for Jim, you know, years ago. Yeah. And but it's interesting because you look at the headlines of local communities and it tells a lot about that. I mean, as we record this program today, it's the anniversary of I Love Lucy, you know, premiering on CBS.
Wow.
And so chances are if somebody were to come to Jamestown throughout the year, there's a decent chance there's going to be something in the paper having to do with Lucy. And that says a lot for our community. Is what Buffalo.
Right.
What was your favorite part about, you know, telling people I grew up in Buffalo? I mean, there's just something that made you proud about being a Buffalonian.
I am still a very proud Buffalonian. I am absolutely a proud Buffalonian. And I am fortunate that, you know, I have a lot of family there and I still work there quite often because from our work, our main office is in Buffalo. And I love to, you know, just enjoy everything up there when I'm up there, restaurants, you know, just like I enjoy locally owned restaurants here, same thing up there. I want to go to the place that I can only get in Buffalo. And, you know, the girls and I have a tradition since they were little on the river and the river that goes into Lake Erie there in downtown Buffalo, there is a break wall and there's a walk on top of the break wall that you can walk. Oh, it's probably a mile or so.
Wow.
And that's one of our favorite things. I try to do it once a year, every single year, is walk that break wall.
Hmm.
Now, you might remember they had a huge storm about 2 years ago. And some people might have seen pictures of some of the houses on the lake covered in ice and all that stuff and those huge ice things. So those big pieces of ice broke the break wall.
Oh, wow.
And so you can't go as far. They still haven't fixed it all. Mm. They fixed part of it. But every year I'm like, please, please fix the break wall so I can walk all the way. And again, that's that competitive side.
Sure.
Where I don't want to go halfway down the break wall.
Yeah.
I want to walk the whole thing.
Sure. Now, as a kid, you said, you know, you weren't in sports, but you were competitive. So did you see yourself? I mean, I can't imagine you would look down, you know, 40 years later and see yourself in the position that you're at with Evergreen Health Services. What did Kimberly want to be when she grew up?
You know, it's funny. It was such a simple thing. I just wanted to have a little house with a porch. And a dog or a cat. And I just imagined myself sitting there being relaxing and reading my books. Honestly, like that. I mean, you know, that didn't, you know, I didn't have these big lofty dreams, but I will say that, you know, I don't really go to the Catholic Church anymore. But that being raised at that time in the '70s and eighties, and in the church really made me know that whatever I was going to do, it was going to be about contributing to the community around me and to society, and that I was going to do some, that my work wasn't going to be about making a paycheck. It was going to be about...
Interesting.
You know, I feel like I believe that we all have a responsibility to the world around us, that it's our job to not just take care of ourselves, but to, you know...
Was there anybody else in your family or in your circle of friends that were in that same kind of business a little bit? That triggered you to go that way, or just did it?
Not at all.
It's come upon you.
Not at all. And you know what was funny is that I didn't plan it either. I had been, it was 92. I went to northern New Mexico to a place called Ghost Ranch. It's run by the Presbyterian Church. And I volunteered for the summer. It was fantastic. I fell in love with New Mexico. And when I came back, I just needed a job. So I flipped through the phone book looking for places that I thought would have a mission that I would care about, that looked like a place I'd feel like being. And I just started calling them and saying, got any jobs open? Got any jobs open? And I called what was then AIDS Community Services. And they said, well, actually, we happen to have, you know, an administrative assistant job. It was, you know, a secretary job open, you know, but we're interviewing right now. So you'd have to give us your resume right away. I go, okay. And I interviewed that week and was hired that week, and I have been there 29 years.
Wow. Wow.
29 years.
Now, and at that point in time, you know, diving into the AIDS, at that point, pandemic, I mean, at that point, because people, there was so much unknown.
Yeah.
You know, people are concerned now about, you know, wearing masks and, you know, touching things. I mean, you were right in the middle of it. Did you have any prior knowledge or I don't want to say concerns, mm-hmm. but getting into that type of job of what you'd be doing, I mean, there was a stigma at that time with the AIDS community.
Oh, yeah. A lot of fear.
Yeah.
You know, I think most stigma is about fear, in my opinion. But, you know, prior to that, I had done volunteer work at Buffalo State College in their Health and Sexuality Center. I certainly had friends and people I knew who had been affected by HIV. So it wasn't completely foreign to me.
Okay.
But certainly not, you know, I didn't know what I was getting into. Soon after, you know, I was doing the front desk work and stuff, I became a case manager in the early 90s and spent every day working with people who had HIV and who had AIDS in their homes all over Buffalo. And it was very intense. It absolutely changed me as a person. It changed who I am and how I look at the world. And we spent a lot of time, sadly, at that time, helping people die well, which I have a great appreciation for now, the work that people like in hospice, et cetera, do. You know that it's important that we're all going there, mm-hmm. you know, and we've got to do it well. It was very, very intense and fast learning and emotional and stressful, but, you know, probably the most valuable work I ever did.
Absolutely. And still do. I mean,
I'm a pencil pusher more, you know, but yeah, I mean, right now, I mean, we look at the current situation. During COVID, overdoses are up 60%. You know, what's our new epidemic?
Yeah.
You know,
the opioid
addiction.
Crisis, yeah. And it's everywhere. I mean, we've seen recently, as we're recording this show, I mean, the state health department, I mean, just millions of dollars being given to regions to up the education, you know, to battle, you know, the opiate pandemic. And it's across the world. I mean, it's everywhere. And speaking of world, Kimberly, you've been around the world.
I've been a couple places.
If we had one of those good old fashioned globes that I'm sure they still have at the Prendergast Library.
I have it at my house.
Do you?
A little bit at my house.
All right.
Absolutely.
So this is what Kimberly does, Russ. She spins it around, you know, every couple of years and goes, I'm gonna go there. but on a serious note, Kimberly, you've
I've been
had
a few places. Yeah. I would love to go more. I wish I had the time and the money, right? Like if I had the time and the money, I'd go everywhere there was to go.
I've been
a couple places.
So you said you went to Mexico?
New Mexico.
So where was the first place you went off of U.S. soil?
Not including Canada, obviously, because I grew up right on the border. We went all the time.
Canada counts. You might as well be
Canada,
Canadian.
Right, same thing. I guess Ireland, 1989.
So what took you to Ireland?
I always wanted to go. As I told you, my mother, you know, my mother had her DNA done.
Did she?
We always knew my mom was Irish. 99.98% Irish.
My gosh. Wow.
I mean, she's as Irish as we thought she was.
The only reason it's not 100 is because the DNA folks don't do that.
Right. They won't say 100.
They won't say 100,
but she's as close as it gets.
So you went to the homeland, basically.
That was basically it. And so I saved my money, you know. You know, you work part-time jobs all through high school and all that, and then people buy a car. But I didn't buy a car. I bought a plane ticket, and I flew over. I remember my mother drove me to Toronto, and I flew out of Toronto, and I was there, I think, 5 or 6 weeks.
In Ireland?
Uh-huh.
Oh, wow.
With no plan, no hotel.
So the idea of backpacking through Europe, I mean,
it was just backpacking through Ireland. I would have liked to do more, and I ran out of money. but that was the first.
What surprises did you have going to another country after, you know, being in the United States and Buffalo all that time? And you got off the airplane and got into the community. What was the surprise as far as lifestyle?
Yeah. I mean, Ireland was easy because it's English speaking, right? So that part was smooth. What was really fun at that time about Ireland was the extreme friendliness of people. People there would do things that no one here would ever do. I mean, very common at that time, and I can't speak to now, but very common at that time to just hitchhike and somebody will pick you up. I remember one time I was picked up, I hitchhiked, and this guy picked me and this other girl up, and he was a bishop of a church and gave us a ride. And another time we got picked up by this woman and her son, and they took us to their house and fed us dinner. I mean, wow. It was like, they don't, you know. So I would say that was,
now what did
that
your,
was fun.
What did your mom think about this at this point? Hey, Mom, I'm going to go to Ireland for I don't know how long. I'll be back someday. And then you're telling her these stories? Or how many years later was it when you said, I hitchhiked with complete strangers, Mom?
I was the fourth child, and my oldest sibling is 13 years older than me. So by the time I was doing this stuff, my mother was like, you want a ride? Okay. See you when you get back. I mean, honestly, I don't remember her. Maybe I was not paying attention, but I don't remember her worrying.
Okay.
I really don't. She was busy. My mom worked two jobs. She worked very hard, and she was okay with it. She was okay with it.
Did any of your siblings take off on an exciting path that you've walked? An exciting path of their own?
You know, I mean, maybe a little different ways. I mean, my sister left the area when she was 21 or 22 and hasn't been back. She's done all kinds of things. And my brother, another one of my brothers lives in Los Angeles, and he works in the TV and movie industry out there.
Oh,
so
wow.
He's found his own way of... You know, so, you know, we've all had our own, our own way of doing that. But I like to live life and, you know, the older you get, you realize, you know, you only have today promised you. Right. So if an opportunity comes, you better say yes.
Sure.
Now, in your world of taking people through some of the health crises that they might have, et cetera, et cetera. And there's so much of it. I've not witnessed, but you hear television and places. Is the suicide situation really as like the television and them put it out to be? And do you get involved in that at all?
No, I don't. I don't know if I can answer that. I guess I could mention from two perspectives. I am on the board of the Mental Health Association here in Chautauqua County, and certainly they have seen, you know, a large increase in mental health crises in general. In our office at Evergreen Health, we do offer mental health counseling, licensed mental health counseling, particularly in our Buffalo office. I'm hoping we're going to expand down here. But we're totally maxed. Mm-hmm. We can't, we're constantly trying to fit in people who have emergencies, but the demand for people who are really struggling with depression has absolutely skyrocketed. So I guess I can't speak to actual suicide attempts, but I can tell you that the demand for crisis mental health counseling is much, much higher. But of course it makes sense because we're all dealing with so much stress right now. Mm-hmm. Our political divisions, our, you know, worries about our own health and our family's health, and there's just so much stress on people. And I think people are feeling more isolated from each other. Not just because we were in lockdown, which, you know, has eased up now, but emotionally disconnected from each other, you know? So
where did going in a different direction, the Evergreen, where did that name come from? Evergreen House, I love it, but...
Thank you. You know, there's a poem that it was based on many years ago. Even when we were called AIDS Community Services, our logo was an evergreen tree. And I wish I had it with me in front of me to memorize. I don't have it memorized. But basically, the poem says, there are trees that die in winter, and then there are the evergreens.
Mm.
And so it comes from that, and it comes from this never-ending hope despite real trauma and stress.
Yeah.
You know, our trees don't die in winter. They stay evergreen, you know, so that's where it comes from. Yeah. I think that was a smart question to even recognize.
So Kimberly Lombard, when we're talking about stress, I mean, obviously, you're not just a pencil, you know, pusher. You have a lot of responsibilities. You're also a mom of two girls. And, Two 15-year-old girls.
Yes.
Twin girls. Twin 15-year-old girls.
Twin 15-year-old girls.
Oh, wonderful.
True.
So I guess before I go into the girls, I want to know, what does Kimberly do with all these stresses that in the world? What is your outlet? What do you do when it's time to shut everything off and just and kind of relax maybe for 5 minutes?
Yeah. And, you know, I do. I'm the fourth child of four. I was the baby. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I am a little selfish and a little spoiled. I didn't have to take care of younger siblings. I do like my own me time, you mm-hmm. know. So I would say stupid stuff. You know, I've been trying to get my steps in, which I suppose is I have to do that. But it's also very relaxing to mm-hmm. just go walking. We've had amazing weather this year.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I've done a lot of walking. I was running, but my ankle's bugging me, so I'm not doing that so much. And again, reading. Silly thing we've been doing at home is watching all the episodes of Survivor on Netflix.
Binge-watching Survivor.
Binge-watching
That's
Survivor.
Funny.
Yep. I usually just will have a new interest. You know, I don't necessarily always stick with the same thing, but I know, like, you know, this past year I thought, you know, I never learned how to embroider anything. I think mm-hmm. I'll do a sampler or just dumb stuff. Mm-hmm. I have good friends, people that I love that I just like to connect with and, you know, go out and have a drink once in a blue
sure.
moon. And I try to enjoy life, really.
When you said you had twin daughters, my heart just broke. my wife, June, is a twin.
Okay.
And her sister had twin girls.
Oh, my gosh.
And so there's two sets of twins that are in my life Aww. Because of that. And it's just wonderful.
Yeah, it's a very special thing, you yeah. know. Just it, well, you know how you feel about your children, yeah. so.
Well, were the arrival of the twins a surprise, or did you know?
No, we knew.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah, we knew the whole time. I call them buy one, get one free.
and how did you name them?
You know, we had a list when we went to the hospital and I was going to deliver the girls. We didn't know if they were boys or girls. We didn't find out uh-huh. ahead. And I had a list of probably six girls' names and six boys' names. And just thought, you know what, we'll just look at them when they come out and kind of see what they happen to look like, which is exactly what happened. I didn't name them until they were 3-4 days old. Ruby is named after her uncle Ron, whose nickname was always Ruby. And McKenna was named after her grandmother, who it's like a family last name, McKenna, that we ended up using as a first name. So they're, you know, they're personal names,
well, that's
but they seem to fit their faces,
that's
if you
wonderful.
Know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. They really do. Beautiful girls. And I mean, 15 years, you've experienced so much, you know, with them. One thing we were talking off the air about was, you know, sports. I mean, not every child plays sports and that's okay.
Yep.
But your kids have been active in other ways. I know music
yep.
has been something that has been a big part of their lives since a very young age. Inform our audience, educate our audience here about the girls and their love of music.
Yeah. And you know, I never played an instrument. My siblings never played an instrument. We didn't have that opportunity as kids, you know. My parents didn't have any money for that kind of thing. But, you know, lucky public school, mm-hmm. you know, fifth grade, they offer them an instrument and they dove in. And McKenna plays trombone. Ruby plays the flute. They've been playing since fifth grade. They're in 10th grade now. And they're in the Jamestown Marching Band. So we have competition.
Mm-hmm.
What, today's Friday? Tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
We have competition tomorrow in Victor near Rochester.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, and they play in the concert band and sing in chorus and have enjoyed being in musicals. And, you know, they love singing. They love music. They love acting, being on stage. They've done some theater. McKenna did, you know, a couple shows at Little Theater,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, they, That's their outlet.
Which is funny, coming from their parents. You're telling us that you were a shy youngster. Lee John is Lee, you've referred to. Lee also, believe it or not, says that he was shy as a young person. But sometimes you take those personalities, as I can even say, like even with me, I mean, I consider myself shy, but you put yourself in the right platform and it just comes out. So it's got to be the type of thing where I would assume, knowing your childhood, Lee's childhood, and then you see these girls just come out of their own and do their thing and have friends. I mean, it's got to be really cool.
Right. It's pretty exciting to watch your kids, isn't it? You guys certainly know that. Yeah, it's exciting to watch who they become. And they are themselves. Mm-hmm. They've come out. I mean, I have two daughters, same age, same household, and they're very different personalities.
Yeah.
They are just them, right? Like, you are yourself, whoever you are.
I just want to know who gets to go where when they're practicing their instruments at the same time. There's a trombone and a flute in the same house when it comes to practicing. It's not like they can just go outside. I mean, how does that work?
Yeah,
they have to take turns listening to each other?
You know, they always practiced separately, and they still do, of course, and they just go in their own bedrooms to do that. But what's fun is, with them being the same age, they've often played the same music. Mm-hmm. And so they actually can practice together.
Right.
Which is sort of fun.
Sure, sure.
You know, we've even had a couple of their friends over to practice, like, you know, four or five kids all practicing together is pretty fun.
What was it like being a high school musician during the pandemic? Because I know, I know that was a big part. I mean, especially for those kids who music is their outlet and they're unique that way. They don't go shoot hoops. They don't, you know, but music's their thing. And then suddenly it's taken away from them.
Yeah.
But I know that they tried really hard, and maybe you can speak to that.
Yeah.
Doing practice as orchestras and bands via internet technology.
Yeah.
That's got to be so challenging. How did that work?
I think the teachers tried very hard to make that work, but there's a delay time. So you really cannot play as a whole group that way. You just can't. They continued to have lessons online. But you're absolutely right. To play as a group, I think the technology had to catch up, you know, and for the kids, that wasn't necessarily the case. But they did keep playing. They did keep providing the music. They kept practicing. They provided them music masks.
Mm.
So all the kids got,
like
a mask with a hole in it for your instrument. Mm-hmm. And then a bell cover. So the end of the trombone, for example, would have a cover. Or for the flute, they had a plastic shield that would stop. What's interesting is that you wouldn't think the flute would be really a germ spreader or a virus spreader, but actually it's worse than most of the other instruments because a flute player uses a lot of lung power. I've learned this from the girls. They've taught me this. Mm-hmm. A flute player uses a lot of lung power to blow the air over the flute, and it goes straight out, like towards at the other person.
Well, sure.
So they have a shield that they were using at that time. But yeah, you know, I've learned so much from them because I didn't play an instrument. You know, I didn't know anything about marching band and how much coordination there is. How do you possibly learn the choreography and the music and memorize the music and do it at the same time and then know exactly where you have to be on the field? And
aren't you glad that they didn't take up drumming? Instead of a flute, they would have two sets of drums in the house when they were younger.
Because they'd have to have their own sets. You know, that's just the way it would have to be.
You are so right about that. Weirdly enough, I don't think it would have bothered me, but I don't think my neighbors would have been super thrilled.
You know, Kimberly, we were talking earlier about world travel, and you said, you know, you've been to Ireland. Where else have you been?
I'll try to remember, but, you know, a little bit after that, you know, I took another trip I've been to England and Germany and Austria. I have a friend that I grew up with since kindergarten, and she and I like to take a trip on our big birthdays, 30, 40, 50. You know, we started off with things like the Bahamas that were more... we had our 50 birthday trip right before COVID. We slipped that in, thank goodness, and we did a... We actually did a cruise. It was the first time I've ever done a cruise, but it was a great way to fit in a lot of countries at once.
Yeah.
And we did Italy, Greece, Malta, anyway, a whole bunch of Mediterranean countries. That was great. I did get to, when I was doing my master's degree, I did get to go for 3 weeks to South Africa, which was a fantastic experience because we did like a nonprofit exchange where we were working in nonprofits there. And so that was very intense experience. A couple of years ago, I got to go to a wedding in Uruguay, South America.
Wow.
Beautiful, beautiful country that, you know, you wouldn't really think of at the top of your list of places to go.
Sure.
So I'm always looking for the next place.
Have you had enough, your passport? I mean, is it pretty torn up by now? I mean, you get to keep all those places, all those stamps. I mean, that's got to be pretty neat.
Well, you know, you have to renew them every 10 years, and they don't really stamp them anymore.
No?
You have to ask, can you please stamp my passport?
You're kidding. Right? Oh, I thought they still did that. Because I remember when I went to France and Spain, and that was like so cool. Hey, here's proof.
I agree. It's really cool. I want them to stamp it, you know?
I remember when we went to Disney, they did that at Epcot. It was, you would go around the world showcase and they'd all the different countries. So as a kid, you'd go with your little kid passport and make sure you got stamped. So you could say you visited all the countries down there at Disney. So
yeah, that's kind of fun.
Yeah, I thought so. I thought it was neat.
I would think with your beautiful smile and your beauty that you have naturally, all of that traveling, you never ran into the ugly American, did you, with the people? Did you ever hear that when you were traveling?
She was the exception, I'm sure.
I don't know. I mean, you try not to be that, right? You try not to be...
Well, what was the first, when they found out you were from the United States in the Buffalo era, was the first thing they would ask you about? Was it Niagara Falls, the Buffalo Bills, or what was it?
New York City, right?
New York City. Huh?
Niagara Falls, yeah. I think Niagara Falls for sure. Or, you know, it depends. It's so funny how over the years it's changed, I would say, right? It used to be things like New York City and Niagara Falls, and now it's like, you know, what do you think of your president? You know,
right. Like, no, you make a good point.
You know, I think people want to talk to you about how American policies impact their country.
Mm-hmm. Really?
How our decisions impact their country.
You talk about Niagara Falls. You know, Jamestown's had several Babe Ruth World Series where youngsters come from all over the country to play baseball. And
it's amazing.
Almost every single one of them asked for, and all of them received, a trip to Niagara Falls.
That's great.
With the host family program and with the volunteers in the community.
Mm-hmm.
They made sure that was one thing, that they played ball at the stadium, but they also went to Niagara Falls.
I'm glad, because it's amazing. And as I said, I grew up very close to Niagara Falls, and my parents would take us to go do anything that was free. And so going to see Niagara Falls was free, right? So
did you ever go under the falls?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I did that last year with the girls.
Uh-huh.
But the Cave of the Winds, and you made them this.
Yeah, Cave of the Winds.
So you've taken the girls, tried to give them opportunities to see, not the world yet, but at least see as much as they can within the United States. And I mean, that's not, it's not easy for families to do. And
it is,
I mean,
so expensive.
Yeah.
This is the problem. You know, the things we would love, all of us, what we would love to do for our children, but it's just so much money.
Yeah, you have to pick and choose, really, what you're going to do. And like, we're in that point now where the kids, do they want to go to Disney? Not really. I want them to go to Disney more than they do, you know. But also, even going to Washington, D.C. or New York City and places like that, you still have to plan. And then, you know, I was very lucky and was able to go to a lot of these places I just mentioned. But I was at that 13, 14, 15, and you appreciate it. But not as much as you would as an adult.
It's true.
So it's also hard where, all right, well, let's take the kids. My kids, I have a 15-year-old and a 10-year-old. Well, they're going to have totally different interests if we go to Washington, D.C. or New York City.
Correct.
So we have to plan on doing it again and again, you know. But the girls, I mean, have there been a place that you've taken them where they have just been like culture shock almost? I mean, seeing a place outside of Jamestown, New York?
I guess I'll answer that in two ways. One, we went to Chicago several years ago, and I love big cities. I love New York. I love Chicago. I love big cities.
Mm-hmm.
I assumed they would love big city, and I was wrong. It was. And now, mind you, you know, again, as you said, they change, you know, and our appreciation changes. So I could probably take them again now and it would be a different experience. But I remember at that time, I think it was frightening. I think it was frightening. You're enclosed by these buildings. There's massive amounts of people walking all over the place. I think it was incredibly sad for them to see homeless people on the street.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was a learning experience, but not what I expected. You know, I expected them to love it.
Sure.
After you've taken this very interesting walk through life, and at this point in time, do you ever look back and wish you would have done something different along the way, or something would have been a little different after you've walked this path?
Boy, you know, I do wish. And then I think, yeah, but then you wouldn't have this or that you did or experienced. So it's tough. Boy, I sure do wish we could be granted five lifetimes so that I could do each of them differently.
Beautiful.
You know, because I want to have, I don't, there's just so many things I want to do, and there's never, ever, ever going to be enough days to do it. The interests, the things you could learn about, the things you could experience. I really wish we could snap our fingers and live again and again and again.
Now, what is the next big adventure for you? I mean, is there something, I know you were talking about, whether it be touring the world or, you know, anything you can, that's coming up that you're just losing sleep over sometimes, maybe?
Well, actually, we just finished, at the beginning of summer, the girls and I had an adventure that we had been planning on for quite some time. So that was the thing we were really looking forward to, which was, I mentioned to you that I was in New Mexico for a summer. I hadn't been back since 92. And I really wanted them to experience parts of the United States that are so unbelievably different than where we live. And so we did all of New Mexico and Arizona. And I actually had won two free airline tickets. So I only had to buy one airline ticket and then, you know, the car rental and the hotel and all that stuff we talked about. But we drove all over Arizona and all over New Mexico. It was a girls' road trip, and they're old enough to appreciate it, and they're old enough to help.
Yeah.
You know, there's no taking care of them. One was helping me navigate, and I was fortunate that I think we all really appreciated. We got to go to the Grand Canyon. That was pretty amazing. So now I think we're in a point where it's like, okay, you know, what's next? I have to do a little planning. You know, we have a wedding to go to in Florida and those sorts of things. But I feel like I need to get my house in order a bit before I go to the next, know, what's going to be next.
Sure.
But I want to help some things that are happening around here. Like I said, I'm working with Mental Health Association. And actually, the Mental Health Association is looking for a new location.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're, that's probably going to be like a project for this coming year, is trying to find a great place for the Mental Health Association. And, you know, if there's anybody listening who has a 9 or 10,000 square foot space in downtown Jamestown.
You never know. And
you don't. People have buildings that aren't being used or that they're looking.
And I know from the volunteering sector, you've had, you know, some experience doing that too. You've tried a little bit of here or there. I mean, everything from little theater to, you know, the Mental Health Association. And I mean, so volunteering, is that something that you've instilled into the girls? I mean, is this something
I hope so.
I don't want to say pushed onto them, but encourage them to do?
I hope so. You know, they've been pretty busy with school and activities, but we've tried to encourage it. You know, they've been involved with Girl Scouts. One of my daughters is pretty involved with Girl Scouts, and they're big supporters of community service. She'll be working on her Gold Award, which is a community service project. So I'd like to think that life will lead them that way, but, you know, we can only do so much. And, you know, you can't do everything. You have to pick a couple things to do. You know, you can't.
Are they coming to you yet and asking for advice on career paths or school? I mean, are they that advanced thinking? I would think in some ways you have very, very bright children. I would think they're trying to get their ducks in a row, probably maybe even a little too early. But, I mean, are they having those serious mom conversations with you?
You know, we've talked about it because they're in 10th grade, and this Saturday morning, tomorrow morning, is the PSAT. So it sort of has triggered the first conversations about, you know, what are you going to be? Who are you going to be? Where are you going to go? You know, and school is outrageously expensive. And but I, so far, and we'll see, maybe I'll be wrong, but so far my girls are what I call typical Lombards.
Okay.
Which is that my whole family has the same trait. We have no idea what we want to be when we grow up. None of us. None of us, like, picked a certain career path, knew what we wanted to be. I'm so envious of those people.
Sure.
Right? The person who, this is what I want to be. This is my path. I would love that. The good part is, you know, maybe they're like me a little bit in that they're interested in everything, which makes life very rich.
Yeah.
But boy, is it hard to pick where to head yourself.
Well, there's so many adults now that don't know what they want to do, you know, when they grow up and they keep going back to school. Speaking of school, that's one thing I didn't get to talk to you about yet is, you know, you got this job, you know, 29 years ago and, you know, you started advancing through the company and you continued to become educated. There's some jobs, there's some places where you can get a job, grow with that company, and maybe never have to make that investment, you know, into that, as some would call a piece of paper. But for you, it was pretty darn important because you know you wanted to not just advance through the company, but also get, you know, that, achieve that challenge of getting that higher education. And as an adult, working towards your bachelor's and your master's while being a mom and working full time, I mean, that's not easy.
It wasn't easy, but I work for a great place that's highly flexible and really values work-life balance. So I'm really, that's why I've stayed at Evergreen so long is because I work with wonderful people who are very real and care about each other. I went back to graduate school. I did it online, though. I mean, some of the classes were in person, but a lot of it was online. I was able to take one class at a time. I value lifelong learning. Mm. So whether that's a degree or learning something else, I think we should always be learning because the world is full of new things and we only have so much time to take advantage of it. Even talking about going to college, I know everybody looks at this differently. My perspective is that college should be about learning a little bit about a lot of things so that we are well-educated, well-rounded people who then have a particular major and that's what we get our degree in. But I love learning. Mm. I think our society is better off when we're all learning. We will never know everything. We'll always grow and change. And so I've enjoyed every class I've ever taken, even if it was something I didn't necessarily use later. Mm-hmm. I think that's why I love reading, because there's always something new and exciting. It's like, you know, diving into this other world or this other aspect that isn't really your real life. But, you know, I'll even read.
In your busy life, did you ever have time for a hobby?
I think that is my hobby.
That is your hobby.
That is my hobby.
That's wonderful.
Like I said, I was pretty engrossed in Chautauqua Literary Scientific Circle. I keep a book where I record every. Notebook on every book I've ever read for that for the past, I don't know, 6 years or something.
You talk about reading all of this, and my father was a reader, but you know, newspapers and magazines and books and everything.
Yep.
But he had a habit of. When he read a book, he always read the last chapter first.
No!
Always read the last chapter first, and then he would read the book.
How could he do that?
Would he remember by the time he got back to the end of the book? Like,
I don't know all of that.
It's interesting, though.
But that was his. He always
I'll tell you, for me, for reading, what got me back into reading is I was reading books that were, got to be careful, not books that were based off movies.
Mm-hmm.
Books that had movies made of them. And if I watched the movie, then I would read the book. And even though I knew it wasn't going to necessarily be the same, I knew that it was enough of a storyline that I'd be interested in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
I love that.
One of my favorites when I was in high school, it was probably the most difficult book I had ever read was The Phantom of the Opera.
Oh, wow.
I mean, you're talking I'll exaggerate, 1,000 pages. Maybe I'm not exaggerating. It's a big, thick book.
Yeah.
And there is French in there.
That's a job.
It was. And I remember wow. reading it when I was maybe in 11th or 12th grade. And I'd already known the story of the Phantom of the Opera from the musical and the movies, and at least, but you read the book, it's like you're reading it backwards. It's the backstories, you know, of the characters and that. And I just, it was fantastic. The same thing, you know, with Victor Hugo's Les Miserables or, you know, yeah. any of these other books. Is,
yep.
So for, as a kid who didn't give a darn about reading, because yep. I was always playing hockey, I, you know, school, what's that? I don't care.
yeah.
You know, but as an adult, I guess it's whatever you have to do to get yourself interested in something.
Right.
And I've appreciated reading much more now. I read something every night.
Oh,
but
really?
It's funny, after going 25 years with never picking up a book,
uh-huh.
and I think that's one of the great things about adulthood is, you know, you can pick and choose, you know, wake up one day and say, I'm going to do this.
Oh, right. And we can always change.
Yeah.
In your travels and things you're involved in, communication is a very important thing, I would presume. Have you introduced yourself to other languages?
Great
you know
question.
What? It is. I stink at it. No, I'm terrible. I'm so envious of people who are immersed in more than one language.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, terribly. College, we had a language requirement. I took Latin.
Wow. Good for
Latin.
You, though.
Mm-hmm.
You go to all these places you're touring, all these countries, you know, that you were telling us earlier. Did you get a travel guidebook for each place? So at least you had the, where's the toilet? Where do I get food? I mean, where's the police? I mean.
Pre-internet?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Pre-internet?
Exactly.
Yeah, I did have a travel guidebook pre-internet. Absolutely. And my favorite thing, which I still love and just brought on our trip to New Mexico, paper map.
Yes.
Oh, paper map.
When my wife and I went on our honeymoon, I'd gone to New York City and New England 1,000 times.
Mm.
But it's different when you're going, you know, your honeymoon. And
wow.
we're going between here and we were going to Boston. I think we were going to Boston. So we were cutting through somewhere. I don't remember where. But I know we got lost. We, you know, we had there was a GPS and we'd printed out instructions. And this was in 2003.
Mm.
Well, we got lost, and we ended up going to this restaurant, and a gentleman could see that we were, you know, kind of upset and kind of overheard us. Well, he was a trucker, and he gave to us his atlas he had had for 25 years. He had been on the road, and he gave it to us and said, I don't need this anymore, but I think
wow.
you guys, we still have it. You know, I mean, it's a treasure. We have it,
wow.
and whenever we see it, we just laugh about, you know, newlyweds starting our lives together and just that little piece of giving something to us to make such a difference in somebody's life. I mean, he didn't have to give that to us. He could have just
right.
given us directions. But
right.
you look at humanitarians and humanity, and there are some good people out there, and we hope we continue to run into those people like Kimberly.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great example of, you know, if we just do those little things. Oh, boy, we have to get back to being a little more selfless.
We have a few minutes left here with Kimberly Lombard on the Times of Your Life on WJTN. Kimberly, we talked about childhood, we talked about travels, career, jobs, the pandemic, as we continue to make our way through that.
Mm.
With you being such a person that is on the go, likes to do things, likes to experience things, what was the pandemic like for you? Not the kids, not your husband, but you, because I have to imagine you were, unless you have a really good wig on, you were pulling your hair out. I mean, it had to have been crazy for you.
Crazy. No, I wouldn't say so. I'm extremely fortunate that the people I am closest with and love the most did not get incredibly sick. I do know quite a few people who lost people to COVID, and so I did not have to suffer that. Our work continued diligently. We never closed.
Mm.
We continued to serve people because you can't not serve people with health issues. I worked from home a lot. And to sort of flip it, not to be insensitive, but I loved it.
Really?
I loved it. I loved being stuck at home and being forced to actually cook instead of get takeout. And painting both of the girls' rooms and being forced to stay at home and do the things that were maybe a little more, you know, meaningful or quiet. Or I actually, because we weren't sick, I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it.
It really forced some people to slow down and look at life in
there
a totally different perspective and force them, you know, to take a break. Almost.
It's almost like you wish you could do that for, you know, 3 weeks every year, right?
Well,
be forced to.
Yeah. I mean,
be forced to stop.
You look at some of the cultures that are, you know, fighting for or have already adopted the 3-day, you know, weekends and, you know, the less work hours. And there is, I think, you know, evidence based on there are health benefits. And with you and your involvement in mental health, I mean, you can see sometimes it's things like that that can make a huge difference in a person's life.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny. It's work and your work schedule. And then, of course, we love our family, we love our friends, but sometimes, and we love our activities, but it takes over to a point where it's just what you have to do instead of enjoyable. Like, sometimes you need to slow down on even the fun things.
Yeah.
Because you're so darn busy.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
In your work with mental health and, you know, other health problems, they have tools to work with, surgically and medicines, et cetera, and, all that kind of thing. What kind of tools are in your tool bag as you're working somebody through a mental illness?
Oh, right. You know, well, I'm gonna talk about addiction a little more than mental, just because you made me think of it with that question. But it works with pretty much any issue. We've changed our thinking over the years as far as how to address problems when it comes to addiction, mental health, our own personal problems. You know, we used to talk a lot about tough love and, you know, setting limits. And I think that entire tone and culture has turned itself on its head because really the research is all showing that that's exactly the wrong approach to dealing with people's struggles. That people who are struggling are isolated, they're lonely, they're hopeless. So the answer is acceptance and love, not tough love, actual unconditional acceptance and love. So certainly in our work, you know, we talk a lot about harm reduction, meaning that each of us is in a different place and in our own problems in our own life, and we have to take it step by step. We can't expect someone to change everything overnight, but we can all make tiny little changes and goals for ourselves that get us there without feeling judged. If we feel like we're failing at every turn, we just give up. So we have to feel loved, and we have to feel like little changes are celebrated, and just because we didn't fix everything, we aren't a failure. So I think that works with mental health and with addiction.
Interesting.
Yeah. In closing our conversation, Kimberly, I know if our audience hasn't already learned, you love your job. You love the company that you, it's hard to say sometimes, work for, you know, because maybe that's, I mean, but when you're so involved and such a part of it. But I do want to give you the moment here to speak to our audience about Evergreen Health Services and basically what can they do? What can we do as a community if we are intrigued by, you know, what you promoted about the organization you work for?
Yeah.
Can people get involved in that organization, or are there ways that they can get more information to help an organization, a growing, successful organization like Evergreen Health?
Right. Yeah, and we are growing. We have 450 employees in Western New York. About 45 of them are employed here out of our Jamestown office. And, you know, certainly, of course, we accept donations. We are a nonprofit organization. And we do have some volunteer work with some of our fundraisers and community outreach work. The biggest thing I think that people can do is educate themselves on how to work with and be in relationship with people who are outside of you know, maybe our normal interactions. We live in my work, I say what we do is the time of miracles. You know, we were talking about when I started working there and how, you know, we're often helping people to make funeral plans. Now, if I test positive and have HIV, I can start treatment immediately and live a completely normal life. In fact, we've just started injectables, which means that you used to hear years ago about people with HIV took a stack of pills every day and the pills themselves would make you so sick. We're at a point through scientific development where now some patients can get an injection once a month and that's it. Wow. That is their entire regimen, which is started this past year with injectables. Same with hepatitis C. We treat hepatitis C every day. Hmm. Hepatitis C used to be a death sentence. It would take maybe 20 years, but it would kill you. I saw some really horrendous things. Saw people die in some really horrible ways from hepatitis C. Now, if you get tested and find out you have hepatitis C, you can be cured in 8 weeks.
Wow.
Cured. Eight weeks. It's miraculous, the difference between a death, a miserable, painful death, and cure in 8 weeks.
And I would imagine a lot of that advancement, yes, the science, the doctors, but, you know, and grant money, sure, but it's the community not giving up on the what ifs. And,
yep.
You know, as simple as
yep.
when a not-for-profit of any type, you know, when you talk about research and development, that we hear every day, you know, through all these different medical, you know, mm-hmm. whether it be from St. Jude all the way down to Evergreen
yep.
to Roswell. I mean, if people have the opportunity to help in the research and development, you yep. just gave me tingles seeing you go from a death sentence to an 8-week program.
It's true.
And that's all because not giving up and continuing with the research development.
And activism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people who fought for... You know, there was a whole movement, ACT UP, et cetera. There were activists in the 80s really fighting for people with HIV to be recognized and for research. And those activists did some crazy things. They blocked streets. They did all kinds of things. But the truth is, they changed the way funding happened, and they changed the way the FDA approves medications.
Mm.
And because of that, the FDA changed how they approve new medicines. And therefore... You can thank AIDS activists in the 80s for the fact that we got a vaccine as fast as we did, because there's a direct correlation to how they go through their approval process. And it's actually more rigorous now. There's actually more data now, but they understand the emergency and that you cannot wait 10 years when people are dying.
Right.
And so, you know, that passion and passion for humanity. So because someone is gay or because they use drugs or because they have a mental health diagnosis or because they're transgender, we must love them. We are called to love. And that's the passion that we have to have. We can't, it's not going to help anyone. Even if you disagree with something they're doing, it's not going to help them to call them names, trash them. That doesn't change people, right? So it just makes everybody feel worse and adds to what you were talking about, Russ, when you asked about the suicide rate. You know, you'd look at teens and suicide rates, and you know, and again, you're right. It's you get the chills when you think about how far we've come. You know that there's a pill now that you can take, PrEP. I don't know if you've heard of it, but you can take a pill. It's actually an HIV medication. But let's say I'm in a relationship and I don't have HIV, but my partner does. I can take that pill every day and I will not get HIV.
Wow.
And furthermore, people who do have HIV and are on treatment, the amount of virus in their body is so low that they cannot spread it to another person. So if I have HIV and I am on medication, I can't give you HIV. You cannot get it from me. You can't get it from me because my virus is so low. Times have changed. And we can do the same thing with other illnesses. You know, when you look at COVID and now they're doing antiviral medication studies for treatment, it's the same concepts that we used on HIV. It's antiviral medication that you could take every day to reduce the amount of virus. It's amazing.
It really is.
Same thing with addiction. You know, we used to say abstinence was the only way. Well, we're finding that that model really only works for about 10% of people. Medication-assisted treatment is actually more effective for a larger number of people. So taking, say, Suboxone or buprenorphine would be for opiate addiction, but I'm hoping we're going to find more situations like this where there's a, you know, like an opioid-type medication that you could take once a day, and it would slow down your addictive impulses, and you could function and work and be, you know, not as pulled by that addiction, which has changed your brain chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the science is so exciting.
It is exciting. Mm-hmm. It really is. And to know that, you know, so much advancement has been done in the last, you know, 30 years, let alone what's in the next five. I mean,
yeah, you're right, because it's moving fast.
It's so very fast.
Where are we going to be next time? You know,
right,
what kind of exciting things are going to be next time?
Well, Kimberly Lombard, we are unfortunately out of time, but I'll tell you what, fantastic talking to you on the air and talking to you in period. I've known Kimberly for 21 years or 20 years working here through her husband, Lee, and this is the most Kimberly and I have been able to talk since before the pandemic, so it's nice to be able to talk again, and we really appreciate you, you know, coming up here and giving us your time. We know you're a busy lady, so thank
you
so much.
It's been very fun.
See, I told you it wouldn't
hurt.
You
were right.
Got to do it again.
There you go. Well, that's going to do it for us. Some more great guests coming up in the future. This show and all shows available on demand at WJTN.com. I'm Andrew Hill.
I'm Russ Heatrick.
And this has been The Times of Your Life on WJTN, proudly presented this week by Lena's Pizza and Rainer's Liquor Store.